Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 185. I'm Steve Borsch, on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
And Phil Wilson.
Good morning.
And Graham Thickens is on Muscle Beach in Venice, California. He's working out. And
please, no.
I don't know where he is. No, he couldn't be on today. I'm kidding.
Let me say first and foremost to our kind listener that we we always take for granted that it's morning because we always record this in the morning. And when I say good morning, we say good morning. You may very well be listening to this at night, so.
That's very true.
Let's just make that clear, and I just realized.
Or the afternoon, so it could be.
Or the afternoon, you could be yeah.
Yeah.
So, who are we to pigeonhole you into when you should listen to the podcast?
Or like me, I listen to a geeky podcast called Security Now on the Twit Network, and
Steve Gibson.
It's fabulous.
Yeah. He's a great guy. I met him at the podcast convention.
Yeah, and I love this because I learn something on every single show, or two or three things. And the kicker is that I can't listen to the whole show. I have to break it up into sections. Otherwise, I kind of start to, my mind wanders a little bit. But
so you're probably not the best candidate for online college.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'd be surfing the net while the lecture's going on.
Turn into the 6-year plan for Steve.
At least. Oh my
god. Let's get to it. We've got some stuff to talk about. We started talking offline that we should probably just go ahead and kick it off because we all kind of realized as people that have blogs and that have RSS feeds that with the imminent demise of FeedBurner that Tim has pointed out to us, we need to talk about some alternatives and what we're going to do about it. So I don't see any story bigger than that unless you guys wanted to talk about Apple's numbers or anything.
No, we'll start with that. But Tim, could you kind of frame up the Death Watch?
Yeah, well, about a week ago, a lot of bloggers noticed that their feed burner counts either went to zero or were not changing. So it got a lot of people thinking about whether or not feed burner is, working. Then Google announced a couple things. One, that they're going to be winding down the API to feed burner later on in October. And then just, I think yesterday, they announced that they're killing AdSense for Feeds, which is the only way to monetize your feed inside FeedBurner. So lots of people in the blogosphere talking about alternatives and are trying to move away from FeedBurner as fast as possible because it looks like that Google's going to shut it down.
Yeah, and they closed down the blog, they closed down the Twitter account back in July, so it's just one of those things. I think it's just sort of petering away, and as we all look for alternatives, again, I haven't spent a great deal of time, probably not as much as you, Tim, but many of the alternatives, if not all of the alternatives that are worth a hoot, are not free. So FeedBurner is this free service, but to get that same robust interaction, you may have to start paying money.
Yeah. I mean, the benefit of using something like FeedBurner is that you can have a feed that can move around. So if you, say, start out on Blogger and then you move to Tumblr and then you go to WordPress, you can still take all of your feed subscribers because your feed doesn't change. Your blogging software may change. So that was one of the reasons why we all started using it way back when.
Right.
And it also gives you or historically gave you fairly good feed counts of subscribers and clicks and so forth. So, everything that I've seen out there except for Marco Arment's bash script that he posted on GitHub this week, which you run as a cron job on your server. And even though it sounds like a super geeky solution, that's the one I'm going to do because it's free and it's not very difficult. There's three things that you have to actually put in at the top of the script. And then you just set it up as a cron as per the instructions at your host, which if you're at least moderately techy, you could figure it out because they have cookbook directions at most good hosts to how to do it. So that's what I'm going to do to test it out on a few of my blogs. And if that works and seems okay, I think that'll probably be what I recommend clients to do. Although there are some paid alternatives. FeedBlitz is one. that I use, have used for email syndication for years. And I pay, I think it's about $9 a month, I want to say. And I think I get, I don't know how many subscribers I get, but I get over 1,000, I think. So it's fairly cost effective.
On FeedBlitz, if you're paying about 13, you get 500 to 999. So not quite 1,000.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Yeah. I guess I'm paying more for that. So.
Yeah. So, the next level up is $29.95 a month.
Well, let's just take a step backwards for a second and ask this question, because this is what my suspicion is, but I have no basis for it whatsoever, and I'd be interested in your feedback. One of the things that Google has really been working on is trying to get rid of all these crackers and hackers and spammers and, you know, all the leeches of their bandwidth and people doing things with bots and so forth. And what I found, now that I've implemented WordFence on a bunch of sites and literally stopped certain countries from being able to access the site, like the Russian Federation and Ukraine and, you know, a lot of ones who are, you know, they're not reading my blog, they're siphoning it. But I found my blog in total sucked down and displayed on sites in Thailand and the Ukraine and all over the place.
You're very big in the Ukraine.
Yeah, very big. Yeah. Well, but so here's what I wonder. I wonder how much, because obviously Google's analyzing the traffic of FeedBurner, and I wonder how much of the content is, you know, being leveraged through the feed and being used for malicious purposes.
Yeah, it could be. Although it's fairly trivial just to you know, pull down stuff via RSS. And if you're gonna scan a site, you're gonna scan it and you're gonna see the CMS generated feeds that FeedBurner is using. So you're gonna see the WordPress or Blogger or whatever, the original feeds, and that's probably what you're going to pull down. And not necessarily FeedBlitz, but it could be, that there's just lots of bots or whatever. But then again, I think it's more likely that it's Larry Page's crusade to purge Google of all these little side things that take resources and don't really deliver a lot of value to Google. But this is one of the plumbing things to bloggers that delivers value to bloggers. And there's a free alternative, but you have to kind of roll your own. So that doesn't look like a great alternative.
Well, and what
to a lot of people.
Well, you know? And this is the sort of thing that originally attracted me to Gmail, was all of these quote unquote side things, you know, all the things you could do like filters and you know, it was all those little geek aspects of their services that they kept delivering. And when they bought Grand Central and rolled it into Google Voice, I thought, this is really cool. When they bought FeedBurner, I thought, okay, this is awesome that they're going to do it, because this is an organization that I can trust and count on, you know, to deliver high value feeds, and they get a lot of bandwidth and yada, yada, yada. But there's got to be some reason that we're just not seeing for them to want to nuke this.
I don't know what it is, but I would suspect that it's just consumes resources and doesn't deliver a lot of value back to Google. It must be that, you know, if they're cutting AdSense out, it's clear that it doesn't deliver value, because, you know, they make their money, most of their money, with the advertising.
Right.
So if they're cutting out their main source of revenue of the product, it's definitely not looking good.
You know, it does, in some ways it makes me sad about all these services that have come up over the last 6-8 years that all three of us and others that we know have jumped on, and they've gone away, you know, for one reason or another. They can't make it or whatever. They get acquired and they get absorbed and then it just disappears. And it just makes it a little tough when you finally figure out all the plumbing issues. Do you remember when Yahoo came out with Yahoo Pipes?
Yep. Oh. Yeah, I still use it.
So do I for a couple of things.
It's good, and I hope they maintain it, because it's great for mashing feeds up and
exactly
and doing, yeah
doing is. Some other it stuff is. But yep. That's another one that Melissa Mayer made this say, you know,
we're
that's
not making
it.
Any
it
money doesn't on fit. It.
We're yeah, done. We're done yeah.
well,
with
see,
this stuff.
Yep. You know? See, that's what I'm worried about. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why I never jumped on it, because it was this aberration for Yahoo. And but for those that don't know what Yahoo Pipes is, it's a way to create a flow, if you will, of a process and bring in feeds and do a lot of different sorts of plumbing things, which is why they call it pipes.
And it's a great source of you know, commentary for us. So that's yeah. it does serve another purpose.
Yes. Yeah. and then you can create this runtime that runs the process, and then you get the result, and you can display the result in different places. So it's pretty cool. And I've always been concerned about services like that that are ancillary and tangential to somebody's core mission. You know, when Yahoo was trying to become the consumer play and the entertainment play, you know, and so forth. I just kept looking at it and thinking, this doesn't fit. It's going to go away. So I'm hoping she does. I'm hoping she does bring it back. We'll know by Tuesday because yes. Isn't Marissa rolling out her new strategy at Yahoo?
Yep. Yep. It's coming
on
next
Tuesday?
Week.
Yep.
Yep.
So that'll be good. And I do hope they make it because, there are a lot of great offerings at Yahoo.
Well, they've got huge properties. I mean, whatever happens to Yahoo, I don't think they're going out of business. I think it may be a different sort of business, but they have got just websites that are just huge in traffic. So someone that's smart should be able to figure out how to make money off of that.
Let's hope.
But it could be that a lot of the other side stuff gets cut. So we'll see. You know, maybe we'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm sure we will.
Well, so,
Steve, why don't you go ahead and shift over and talk a little bit about the Bloggers Conference that you presented at last weekend?
Well, I was just going to segue into that, Phil, because I was going to talk about blogger tools. You know, and things
crap!
Like,
so I totally derailed one of the another you know quintessential segue from Steve Borsch. I'm sorry,
and I just crap. Hate when I just hate when that
I
happens.
Know they're works anyway. Of art, and I got in the way of that. And I do apologize.
Well, so what I'm seeing is how many use Jetpack? You guys both use Jetpack?
No,
from WordPress.
I try not to use it because it just got so bloated. There's a fork of it called Jetpack Lite, I think it is.
Mm-hmm. This is just a group of plugins from WordPress. So we should probably point that out.
Right.
Right. I didn't see the value in the whole pack. Because I frankly don't use most of them, but I do see some value if you're not going to hook up, say, Google Analyticator or one of the other Google Analytics plugins to show you Google stats. Then you know to have WordPress stats is better than nothing. So that Jetpack Lite, which just has basically stats in it only, I sometimes use that, but not the full Jetpack.
Yep. Well, I found that it actually performs pretty well. And so where I wanted to go with this was the tools for bloggers are becoming easier to implement. So I'm seeing things like Quick Cache come out from the Primo Themes guys that do S2 Member. Super simple caching capability that works really well. I'm seeing things like Jetpack from WordPress, you know, and even sites like Squarespace, the hosted service, are getting easier and easier to use. So I'm wondering, you know, if one of these are going to kind of take the high road with respect to things like RSS feeds or ways to create mashups of feeds, if we're going to see some of that emerging. Any thoughts? No,
none whatsoever.
None whatsoever.
Sorry.
Well, so here's what I saw. The Minnesota Bloggers Conference was last Saturday.
Yep. And a fine event.
And a fine event. And Albert Marugi and Patrick Rohn and I did this podcast panel right at the end. That was fun.
And Steve, Tim, I don't know if you knew this, but I believe that all of the podcasters on that panel really secretly want to be on National Public Radio. I don't know if you knew that, but
Yeah.
I don't think it's so secret.
No.
What? I think it's right out there. They all do, obviously.
Okay. Well, so anyway, at
least Minnesota Public Radio. Yeah.
At any rate, there was a nice mix. This is totally a swag, but I would say 10-15% of the people that were there were pretty savvy and pretty technical.
Mm-hmm.
And then the lion's share were not, and, you know, were relatively neophyte with respect to, and I talked to a few people, and looked at their blogs and so forth. And those are the kind of people that need a simple tool like a feed burner, or a jetpack and so forth to be able to add things mm-hmm. to their sites. But, I thought it was a really great conference. The one thing that I enjoyed somewhat Rick Capella's keynote, "Bring Me the News."
It was somewhat,
but
rambling and self-aggrandizing. But
well, just a bit. but I sat there and I looked at that and I thought, bringmethenews.com is their aggregation site that, you know, they're curating content and humans are annotating various parts and pieces of a story and then delivering all the links. And I looked at that and I thought, you know, the algorithms are getting so good, especially personalized algorithms that we're seeing in apps like News 360, which you can go online and see news360.com. And I just wonder how these guys are going to be able to compete long-term.
Local.
Yeah, I know you and I talked about
the angle, but Patch is going to probably cover that.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see. However, you know, Rick has assembled a team of some pretty good people. I look at, you know, guys like Tom Elko, who I think is brilliant, and I think they've got some good stuff behind them. We'll see what happens in the long run, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. So, Phil, did you learn anything?
Was there anything that was like, oh my gosh, this is
amazing?
I don't know if it's an oh my gosh sort of thing. I really like the nuts and bolts stuff. I thought Michael Robentine was great as far as, you know, talking about plugins that you need and can't live without and that sort of a thing.
Yeah, I like that session.
I enjoyed that a lot. I thought that, you know, the keynote with Rick Capella was okay. I learned a little bit more about the new version of Bring Me the News than I had known. So that was always good. And it's always great really just to meet the people that are there. You know, when we spend a lot of time doing tech, you know, events, whether it's a conference or a unconference or just a meetup or a users group, the three of us spend a lot of time doing that. And the thing that I think we've always lamented is it's really, how did Kurt Prinz put it on Saturday when we were talking? He said, it's really kind of a sausage fest most of the time. It's always a lot of guys.
Yeah.
And the great thing about the Bloggers Conference is you're seeing that more and more and more women are getting involved in blogging and online, whether it's the social media space. But so it's nice to see a balanced group, you know, almost to the other extreme, probably more women than men at that event. So it's always good to see that in the world of tech, when there is a little bit more equality. You know, in that room. So I like that.
Yep. Well, and then they had this headshot thing, which I thought was cool, where you could go and get a free headshot, and then of course donate if you wanted to charity. And
they raised a lot of money.
Well, on the Minnesota Blogger Conference site, there is some examples of last year's headshots, and the quality is great. And I, you know, how many people don't have good headshots? I mean, it's pretty high. So,
yeah. So I thought it was a good event.
Okay.
So what did you think, Steve? Did you walk away with learning anything?
Yeah. I mean, like you, I always learn something because I'm looking to learn. But there wasn't much that, you know, took me from one point to another point and raised my horizons dramatically. The kinds of things that and you asked the monetization question during the podcast panel right at the very end, right when we were ending.
That's the thing.
But that's the thing that I want to learn, for example, at a national bloggers conference is, you know, what are some good, solid, authentic ways to monetize, you know, either your blog or your podcast, et cetera?
Well, I mean, I spent that period of time with the Association of Downloadable Media, you know, working with them, and the ADM no longer exists, basically because of trying to wrangle the interest of bloggers to come together and figure out, and podcasters to figure out ways to monetize or standardize so we could better monetize the channel. It's very difficult to figure out a way to monetize. And it seems that bulk, at least at the tail end of the life of the Association of Downloadable Media, it seemed like bulk. You had to be basically a podcast network to realize enough economy of scale, enough scale to, you know, basically have an economy. So,
yeah.
But yeah, that's the important thing, is how do you monetize? And I think that most people at the bloggers conference clearly are monetizing basically on thought leadership. They're using it as a tool to enhance their brand, enhance their value, enhance their collective intelligence. So am I right?
Yeah. Well, so you went to that Minnesota Search adventure.
Right. And it was sponsored by MN Search and our friend Ward Tongan and his group. And it was actually put on by a group called GetListed.org, which is a company that helps small businesses, well, just that, get listed, show up in search. And it was a good day. I can't say, at least in the morning, did I walk away with the, oh, wow, that was great. But again, I spent a lot of time in this space, and the morning session was really designed for small to medium businesses to understand, to get a rudimentary understanding of search, local search, and, you know, basically getting their brand and their business out there. So we spent a lot of time on Google Places and, you know, optimizing for search and optimizing for place and that sort of a thing. So that was very good. The deep dive stuff happened in the afternoon, and they were, the nice thing is they were short sessions, about 20 minutes long, and they'd cluster them together, and I enjoyed it. Yes, there was a lot of rudimentary stuff for people like you and I, but for the small business where it's focused, where they're focused on, you know, opening the doors and making the donuts, this was really a good piece for them. And it was very Google heavy, because obviously Google is one of the sponsors. I thought a day well spent, a lot, especially for a small business person.
Huh.
I'm trying to find, I thought that there was going to be a link to access slides and things like that. And if I can find that, I'll get it to you. We were given a packet of some very helpful tools for that sort of thing. And oh, Steve, I picked up a little book for you too, because I, you know, when I saw the title of this book, it just screamed Steve Borsch.
And?
Online Marketing for Dummies. I picked that up for you. So
thanks, Phil.
No, I'm just kidding.
What did they say, especially the Google people, what did they say about optimizing your site for search?
Very little.
No.
The folks from Google are hell-bent on Google Plus. That was basically what they talked about. So the Google people, when they had their piece. But the folks from GetListed.org, we talked a lot about the changing algorithm, the changing, you know, pieces of the puzzle. So, it, you know, I think the takeaway at the end of it is, well, this was great, but probably next month there'll be a whole new set of keys, you know, to being successful in search.
You know what's amazing to me, though, about the whole push for Google Plus? As Graham pointed this out, I think even maybe last week or the week before, about how sometimes you can look at your home feed on Google Plus and nothing has changed for hours. Do you guys find that too?
Well, it depends on how many people that you've subscribed to.
Yeah, who are you following?
Well, I'm probably have, I don't know, 125 or so that I follow.
Yeah.
I follow more, and I'm following more all the time, so I'm using it almost like Google Reader.
Oh, interesting.
You know, and one of the ways that I consume it is on Flipboard, which you know, it's a good way to do that.
I'm loving Flipboard more and more every day.
And, you know, it's just, it seems like if I look at my Google Reader feed on Flipboard versus my Google Plus on Flipboard, it's Google Plus is a lot more engaging just because of the way they use of imagery. And maybe I'm just subscribed to more photographers or whatever on there, but it just seems more interesting.
Huh.
You know,
well, so. I'll go take a look at that.
So I've moved pretty much all the sources that I normally read in Google Reader over to following the same folks or blogs or whatever on Google Plus, and then just in Flipboard looking at Google Plus, and you know, it's an enjoyable way to read that stuff.
Well, I'll tell you, there's a man who is in his 70s who used to live in our neighborhood, and when his wife passed, or they moved and his wife passed and stuff, and so we were talking, and he said, well, the one thing that's keeping my brain alive is I'm a news junkie. He said, I just love news. And then he went on and on about how he had bought this iPad and he was so enamored with it, he bought one for each one of his kids. And then the older grandkids, not all of them. But as he and I were talking, I asked him if he'd seen Flipboard. He says, no, what's that? Well, he had his iPad with him, so he downloaded it right there. I opened it up. I showed him. You know, a little bit about it. And he was absolutely blown away. He goes, how do these publications make money? I said, well, you know, you're flipping through. You're going to flip through. You're going to see a huge ad, or you're going to see a lot of ads in there. Flipboard is really making steps to do that. He said, yeah, but they're not, you know, intrusive at all. And, no. And so for the same sort of thing, you know, about having feeds on topics that he's interested in, is a nice extension. So I'm thinking, God, it's this is great for, you know, people of all ages, right?
Yeah, the iPad is really you know, device.
Oh,
that's,
I knew it.
No, it was about Flipboard. No, it was all about
of
Flipboard.
The well, yeah. So I've been doing a side by side of an iPad versus Android. In the tablet space for the past few weeks.
And?
So I have access to both platforms. And, you know, Android is just not ready for prime time in the tablet space at all. I mean, the iPad is so much more superior. And you look at apps. I mean, right now, Android in the tablet space has apps like Flipboard that are native, that look good. They just don't work as well as the equivalent app on iOS, on the iPad. So the iPad is just so much better. Even the apps that Android has that are tablet optimized, like Flipboard and a number of others, it's just not as good and not as polished and are buggy. And just, you know, it just demonstrates that Apple is way ahead. Even as the hardware gets pretty much equivalent in build quality and specs and all that stuff, the software is just miles away from being the same.
How did we do this? How did we slip into the Apple discussion?
Well, just wait though. Have you used
just wait?
Well, no. Have you used Flipboard specifically? Because you know it's available for the iPad, Android, Kindle Fire, and the Nook.
Yep.
Have you tried it on the Android tablet? And,
yeah.
And how does Flipboard itself function?
It's usable, but it's not as fluid.
Oh, okay.
It works slightly differently, you know, like on the iPad where you go left and right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, right? It goes up and down on Android.
So it's you know, because I use Flipboard on my Android mobile, so so it's probably more designed that way, because everything's up and down on Flipboard mobile,
right?
For me anyway, in the Android platform. I don't know if it's like that on the iPhone.
Well, but on the Android tablet, it is a tablet optimized app, because it's not like, you know, just a blown up.
Even in the horizontal position, it's up and down.
You know, I don't use it that way. I just use it in portrait.
Oh, okay.
So I'll try that. I don't know. But it's just not, it's kind of stuttery. It errors out occasionally. So it'll just bomb out and take you back to your you know, regular launcher and you have to relaunch it. The one on the iPad is just like butter. It's just boom, boom, boom. And you're, you know, and the iPad that I have here is the iPad 2. So it's not even the latest greatest and it's still much better.
Interesting. Well, I just have to tell you guys a quick story and I'll tie it into Flipboard and I'll tie it into RSS and all of that. Back in the 90s. Yes. That long ago.
Are you going to talk about CD? What was it?
I am not going to. No. I'm going to talk about.
CDI? You're not going to talk about CDI?
No,
come on.
No. But what I am going to talk
Philips
about.
Philips is going to take over the world of interactive CDs.
No. I had a CompuServe account. 70662.3546 at CompuServe.com. How's that for an email address?
Nice. I had a similar one.
But I was spending about between $80 and $150 a month. On gateway access to databases, because all of the major, you know, LexisNexis, everything was online through that, and it was all menu driven, you know, with numbers and so forth, kind of like Gopher was back in the day. And I used to find articles in there that were just fabulous, and I would copy them, and I would paste them into an email, and I would send it to one of my clients. And say, oh, by the way, don't know if you saw this, et cetera, et cetera. And I would do that every single day, sometimes 2-3 times a day, not to the same client, of course, and spam them. But every single one of them was stunned and blown away. Like, where the hell did you find this? I didn't see it till the next day when it was in the Wall Street Journal. And so that was really cool for maybe, you know, 2 years or so until the web really hit. And then there's more and more ways to get news online. But think about where we are right now. You're reading Zeit or you're reading Flipboard and you press the arrow button and now you can tweet it and email it.
Or bring me the news.
But you can tweet it, you can email it, you can shove it into Instapaper or read it later. You know, just this whole sharing of information is really accelerating people's knowledge if they're paying attention. But that's the big question. Are they paying attention? Are people really absorbing stuff this way, or are they just occasionally doing it? Is it just people like us that are kind of into it, or are news junkies that are, you know, really paying attention?
No, I think that most people are, or enough people are, and that's why that the newspaper business is on a collision course with the ground and on a hell ride. So, you know, I think what we're going to see
nice
is
explanation. Wow.
Yeah, wow. It's like a rocket ship to hell.
Right? Wow,
that's what the newspaper business is.
Wow.
And I think that we're going to see, you know, like New York Times and the Financial Times and the Wall Street Journal. We're going to see these big ones. They're going to be the only newspapers standing here in a bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything else local or whatever is going to be Patch and a few other, specialists. And it's all going to be online.
Well, I think it's going to have to be. I mean, do we really, in this market, do we really need four evening news broadcasts twice in the night?
Yes, we do. And they need to be at least 4 hours long.
Oh, man.
Because there is that much news, for God's sakes.
Yeah, but when you can open up an app like News 360 or go to their website or even Bring Me the News, mm-hmm. and you can see a story, but oh, by the way, here's 14 sources, you know, LA Times, New York Times, Chicago Tribune, you know, the Milwaukee Journal, whatever it happens to be. You can, you know, get that 360 degree perspective. And then they also now are including blogs, you know, people who are commenting on it based mm-hmm. on readership and so forth. So you're getting a really good view of a story without relying on one source, whether it's a trusted source or not. And to your point, Tim, I think that really, that's why they're going to auger into the ground. And it's going to be spectacular explosion.
You know, I follow the retail industry closely every day, and you just see all of these syndicated stories on Reuters and Bloomberg and AP, And all the same stories are going across all of these newspapers. So you see the same stories, right? Syndicated across the, and, you know, with the internet, you can go right directly to the AP site, right directly to Reuters and to Bloomberg and get the news direct from the source. You don't have to have it curated, filtered, whatever, and wait. So that direct access to the news means that, you know, local newspapers are going to really have to figure out a different business model that's going to be super local, and there's going to be less of the national news and international news that's covered there.
Okay, just so let me just
because all that stuff is just out there, you know, for free.
Right. All right, so let me ask you this one question though, because it's one thing that's haunted me over and over and over again, and it's something I guess they cover at the museum, that big museum in Washington D.C. for the news, and it's talked about a lot. It's investigative journalism. You know, where's the Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein of the online era that are digging in and coming up with the big breaking stories? One could argue the big breaking stories are going to break because you've got, you know, some waiter giving a video to Mother Jones magazine. Ooh. And releasing it. Mitt Romney now is doing a humma humma on what he said. So maybe that's it. I mean, maybe the investigative journalism is, you know, a bunch of people that care that dig into a story. But one of the reasons that Woodward and Bernstein found out about Watergate was because Deep Throat knew that he could trust those guys to keep their mouths shut. And he could release the information. And I worry more about the loss of investigative journalism than anything else.
Well, I do too. And if we're going to get into this wild west of, you know, anyone can post anything online and that's journalism, that's a very dangerous place to be.
Yeah. Yep.
And you're going to see these Kate Middleton long range telephoto shot kinds of things happen a lot more frequently.
Hey, can we post those, by the way?
No,
probably not. Oh, sorry.
No, it's just a crazy kind of world where if you don't have a real journalist working, you know, multiple sources and really trying to figure the stories out, you're just going to have just all sorts of rumor, innuendo, and you won't know what to believe.
Yeah.
I want to, Tim, I don't know if you know this or not, but, you know, with your comments of the, what, ride to hell, did you say? Rocket ship to hell. Your hurtful comments have killed Arthur O. Sulzberger.
What?
Who's the publisher of the Times. As we've spoken here today, it's come into my feed that you killed the former publisher of the New York Times with your comments. Really? He died at 86 because of you.
did he really pass?
To the family.
Yes, he did. Oh, yes, geez. He really did.
At least
popped up in my feed, and I thought, oh, how appropriate. Tim is calling it a rocket ship to hell.
at least he didn't.
And it puts him right over the edge.
Well, at least he didn't have to live to see what it's going to become.
But
I think that New York Times and a few other brands like that are going to be able to make it. But Star Tribune, Pioneer Press, all the other, you know, papers that we read today, I don't see a great future for those.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really tough.
And what's really funny in the digital side of things, so again, let's talk about iPad specific, because I don't think that either paper has an Android tablet app. So I've looked at both of those, and I consider the Pioneer Press, probably because of Julio and maybe a few others, to be more progressive in technology. But their iPad app, it has to be the worst newspaper app I've ever seen.
The Pioneer Press?
Yeah.
It's
horrendously bad. And the one from the Star Tribune is actually pretty good.
Well, I think it's too basic, but yeah. I mean, he did add sharing in, so that was good.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a pretty good attempt, which is shocking.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. Right.
How did we get on this death of newspapers, Rand? It's not even in the notes.
Came from Flipboard.
It was a segue from Flipboard. That's right.
Oh, okay. All right.
Praising iPad.
Well, since we're talking about iPads.
Android. And then we talked from iPad to Android. We got to Flipboard. Then Flipboard got to news. And yeah, it was.
Teresa Boardman's going to be mad at us for rambling. She mentioned something at the bloggers conference. Sorry for calling you out, Teresa, because we actually loved it. That you did that.
I love listening to Minovate, but sometimes you guys ramble a little bit. It's like, if we ramble, it would be a 5-minute show.
We're rambling today. Yes, but let's get back on point here. So since we're talking about iPads, let's talk about Apple and the kind of not unprecedented, but rare CEO apology.
Apology, but suggestions of apps to use instead of maps.
Yeah, which is crazy, including the web version of Google Maps and Nokia Maps, which is just hilarious.
Yeah. Well, so here's my
maps
take.
Thing on, is pretty well, pretty serious.
And my take on that was that Apple saw one of the biggest potential liability holes the company has ever faced. Because if somebody ends up in the wrong place, you know, the wrong part of town, and they get murdered, they're going to go after Apple because of the product.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You're thinking too litigious.
Well, people go after those with money.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, that's a legitimate concern.
You think Apple's got money? Jeez, I think they're just scraping by.
No,
this is pretty shocking that they could put out such a bad product. But I can kind of see why they did it, because it's like pulling the Band-Aid off, you know, you have to pull it off at some point. And I know that it's been reported that they had another year on their existing deal with Google. So they could just keep Maps going the way it was, which was okay, but they couldn't add things like turn-by-turn directions and stuff, which from their standpoint, from a feature set, is a killer thing. And that is one of the things that people, I think, legitimately would have in their criteria to make the decision on buying a phone or not.
Yep.
You know, right? So they needed to do this, but it's just not ready. And I don't think it's going to be ready for quite a while. I mean, a lot of the Apple... you know, loyalists, writers are saying, oh, this will be fixed by, you know, Halloween, or this will be fixed by the end of the year, whatever. No, I think this is not going to be fixed in 2 years. Going to take them at least that long and a lot of money to catch up.
Well, I think it might have been Graham, might have been Tim, you last week. It's not the app that's the problem. It's the data. And collecting data is the problem. And it's going to take much longer than Halloween to get that up to date and fixed up. So it wasn't something Google did in a heartbeat, and it's not something that Apple's going to do in a heartbeat. And again, it just kind of comes back to that expectation of what you look for from an Apple product.
But both Google and Nokia have spent billions of dollars, and they've been at this for 6 and 7 years.
Yep.
Right.
So this is not something, even though you have billions of dollars at your disposal, that Tim Cook has, and I know they're throwing a lot of bodies against this thing to try to make this better. It just you just can't get there
that
fast enough. But at the same time, let's say his other choice was, let's continue to build Maps kind of off to the side, make it as good as I can in the next year, you know, continue to go down the road with Google, right? But not have a competitive Maps app for a year, right? I guess they made the determination that was worse than what they're going through right now with a horrible version one.
Well, see, the only thing that that people are really missing out of this whole discussion is the fact that Apple needs the user input. They need users to use it.
Right.
So they can look at location and things of that nature on the mobile devices. So without putting it out there, they can't get the user data. So it's kind of a catch-22 for Apple.
And if you haven't had a chance to take a look yourself, Tim Cook is recommending Bing, MapQuest, and Waze, or use Google or Nokia Maps and go to their websites and create an icon on you. So just so you know, that's what he's recommending.
Right.
Well, and Google makes it really easy. If you go there on an iOS device, they actually, it's a little popping thing that pops up by the menu or by the address bar that basically shows you the icon and says, do you want this on your home screen? Just press here. And so they make it really easy for even people that don't understand how to do that, to do that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that you know, that one of the discussion points this week is that Google, you know, they had to know that this was going to happen, especially after it was announced at WWDC. How long could it take them to develop this app to replace it? And it could take a long time because, you know, people probably don't remember that the app itself was an Apple app. I mean, Apple developed the Maps app. It wasn't a Google app. They were just using the Google Maps API to pull the data in.
Right.
So it was an Apple.
It was a data piece. It's the data piece.
That's right. So Google, you know, let's say that WWDC, they see, okay, Apple's going to do this thing. They go, holy crap, we got to start on our own version of iOS Maps. So they've been working on this since the summer. It could take 6-8 months for them to come up with, you know, a good iOS version of it. And there's no guarantee that Apple's going to approve it once it goes into the approval process.
Well,
right.
There's
exactly.
That. Yeah. Yeah.
And if I'm sitting there and if I'm Google, I'm sitting on a huge advantage right now to sell phones. I may not even want to do it. You know? So
it'll be interesting. More to that saga, I'm sure. Listen, we ought to kind of do a quick little wrap up of what's coming up here, guys.
Well, except I want to mention one more quick thing.
I'm sorry.
This was put in the show notes about SmartThings.
Yes,
the startup. They raised $1.2 million on Kickstarter.
$1 million,
and they're trying to raise $250K. And I'm hoping they ship on time because I want my stuff in December.
You want your things
and my hub.
Yep.
And
hub.
Really, really looking forward to what's happening with these guys because it's really the first strong consumer play that's platform oriented. Because there have been others out there like Control 4 and of course the old X10 and things like that, but none of them were really platforms that, you know, the three of us could come up with a sensor that uses the Zigbee protocol or something, and then it would automatically work with SmartThings. And we could just say this is, you know, a SmartThings compatible sensor and or light switch or whatever it happens to be, and sell right into that same channel. So it's pretty exciting.
Okay, so things Good. Coming up, right?
Things coming up.
We've got MHT open house is the 3rd, which is Wednesday.
Down at the new Grain Exchange office.
Yep, right next to Coco. Yep.
Yes.
The following week, MEMA Summit. And we should point out that next week on the podcast, we'll have Tim Brunell here from MEMA to talk about the MEMA Summit and what's coming up. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yep.
What else, kids?
Well, the Collaborative, the Minnesota Venture and Finance Conference on the 11th, the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And then the She's Geeky is still coming up on the 19th and 20th. But, this is out of order. October 13th, Word Up, Minneapolis.
Yeah, I got a quick little tweet from Toby Krenz at the Minneapolis St. Paul WordPress Users Group, and they've put together Word Up, which is happening at the MCTC campus in Minneapolis on the 13th.
Right.
Yeah, I put up Startup Weekend Twin Cities 4 in the notes new.
Got which it. Is November 2nd.
The 2nd.
Yep. Yep.
And don't forget about MobCon, which is slated for the 13th and 14th of November, a couple of days on mobile. And we also have a discount code for Minovate fans or people that listen to the podcast, either one. So check that out. That's on our page there. It's Minovate Pals. Is the discount code for MobCon. So.
Yeah, and it is case sensitive. So just look at the show notes and you'll see the discount code.
Yep.
And how it's spelled. Great.
Gotcha. Lots going on. There you have it.
Well, as always, thank you for listening to
the Minovate Gang podcast.
Have a good week.
Take care.